This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. I write about the digital signage business on my blog, 16.9. I celebrate great and intriguing work, I explore and explain new technology, and I filter the industry BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to get beyond the press releases and trade show chatter and hear from some of the most successful, influential, and interesting people in this business. In this episode, I'm chatting with Nancy Liu, the CEO of Nplug, a Los Angeles-based digital signage CMS company she started with a group of new friends after she graduated from Berkeley just 4 years ago. Nancy talks about being a millennial Asian CEO in an industry mostly run by middle-aged white guys, growing a company in a rental house in Bel Air, and how Nplug now has something akin to franchise offices in places like Nigeria, Slovakia, and Australia. Nancy Liu, thank you for coming on this podcast.
It's a pleasure.
All right. I wanted to talk to you for a few reasons. First of all, why don't you give me a quick overview of the company and we'll go into a little more detail a little later in the chat.
Great. Sounds good. So I'm co-founder and CEO of Nplug. We started Nplug almost 4 years ago. And the idea was to make digital signage really simple. So what we have is this device that can It's a plug-and-play solution. You can connect it to any kind of display, and then you can go onto our online dashboard and easily manage any kind of content. You can schedule things, but what's really unique is that we have an app platform. So there are apps for the user to choose from to show various types of content. They can also build their own app if they would like as well.
Okay, so we'll go into that a little later. I want to drill down on the App Store thing. So I want to talk to you for a few reasons. I think what Nplug does is interesting. I was out to see you guys last year sometime or other. What's intriguing for me, first of all, is you're about half the age of most of the CEOs in this industry. And I'm guessing you may actually be younger than one of my kids. And you're also a woman in a sea, absolute sea of white middle-aged men in this industry who are running digital signage companies.
I think you're right.
So what's that like?
Well, I think it actually is not just unique for the digital signage industry. It's that scenario for across tech. And so for me, I think I'm just used to it. I think all of the prior careers and jobs that I've had have put me in situations where I'm surrounded by, you know, middle-aged white guys. And so I'm kind of used to it. At the same time, I know that, you know, I am representing a group that typically isn't represented. So in a sense, you know, I almost put more pressure on myself to make sure that I do a really good job so that, you know, I'm representing a female entrepreneurs well and Asian entrepreneurs well.
Mm-hmm. Does age give you an advantage in a lot of ways? And the reason I say that is a lot of technology, a lot of social media stuff that's emerging all the time is kind of elusive to somebody like me. So I've read endlessly and talked to people who said, well, you know, Snapchat is a thing now. You need to understand Snapchat. And I've tried. And I just can't embrace it. I don't get it. I understand technically what it does, but that's about it. So is it really helpful to be a millennial and kind of live in that world?
I think it is. Because I grew up with social media in a sense, not as much as my little sister who's 13, who has never heard of MySpace, but I remember, you know, the first one I got was this Zanga, X-A-N-G-A, and then I got MySpace, and then Facebook, and then Instagram, and then Snapchat, and so that has always been part of how I interacted with friends and found out about what they were doing, so I think that is really helpful. Now going to your question of, you know, whether age has been an advantage or disadvantage, I think it's been both. Because I think the advantage of, you know, being older in the industry is you've just seen a lot more. You've seen what works, you've seen the successes, you've seen the failures, and I think there's a lot of value to that. I think when we started, none of us were really from digital signage industry. We were just a bunch of kids saying, hey, digital signage is really difficult to use. What can we do to make it easier? And so because of our almost naivety going into it, we were just excited and we just wanted to do things totally in a different way because we didn't have any kind of background on what was already being used.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of going through your website, I get a sense that you have a lot of sort of gray-haired guys who are investors and therefore advisors and mentors.
Yes, we do. And they are fantastic. Now, they also don't come from the digital signage industry. Some of them have experienced digital signage. So they are great people to bounce ideas off of because, one, they also come from a fresh outlook on digital signage. And then, two, the ones who have experienced it, they can see the really big difference.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see having digital signage experience as necessarily a plus sometimes.
I agree.
You came out of Berkeley and started this about 4 years ago with your friends. You didn't go and get a job from what I could tell. You kind of made one. How did that all play out?
Definitely was not in my plan when I was going into college. That's for sure. I thought I was going to go to law school. I'm so happy I didn't. But I remember my senior year, second semester, was when I was determined to start my own company. I had gotten great internships in the past. I had full-time offers from your traditional, you know, really top-of-the-line Fortune 500 companies. But I decided it was actually a lot more fun to just start your own company. I was starting random projects and building things and trying to sell it throughout my time in college. My business fraternity, the engineering groups I was part of, my sorority, they were always spammed by these beta codes I was giving them, telling them to download my new app and try it out. So it was kind of just, I just really loved doing it. Mm-hmm. And so then second semester, I remember calling my dad and saying, "Hey dad, I think I'm going to drop out of school to start a company."
How did that go?
Well, my dad is a very traditional Chinese dad who's a professor.
Uh-huh.
And so I was kind of nervous about telling him. And you know what he said? He was like, "That's great. Go ahead." And I was like, "Wait, what a minute? Wait, you're not supposed to say that." But it was pretty funny. And I ended up still finishing school. But in a way, that reverse psychology totally worked on me. Because my dad said, "Well, go ahead." I was like, "Okay, well, if you say okay, then in fact, I'm actually going to finish." So it was kind of funny. I just loved building things and I met the right people to start Implug. I had no desire to go into digital signage. That wasn't an industry I was familiar with, but rather I met a group of people that were so great and we realized we can put together all of our skill sets to do digital signage, which is a combination of software, hardware, media, and design.
And you did this in LA as opposed to up around San Francisco where you went to school.
That's right. What I tell my investors is different than, you know, what my real reason is. I tell investors, "Well, LA is great. It's an intersection of media and tech, and it's a lot more affordable." The real reason, Dave, is I just love LA. When I was growing up in Colorado, it was kind of my dream to go to sunny California and to, you know, work in LA.
Uh-huh. And they don't get the fog.
Well, sometimes.
Not the same way.
I'm sure.
So part of the lore, so to speak, of Implug is that you and your new business partners set up in a house that you rented.
Right.
And that's how you kind of built out the company from there. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the first place that we got was this one bedroom, one bathroom apartment in the cheapest place we could find in LA, which is Koreatown. And we didn't even know each other at the time. We had just met the week before. We were all impressed with each other's backgrounds and what we built. So we dropped everything and said, "Okay, let's do this." And the best way to go all in is to live together and work together. So we did that for the summer. There was no air conditioning, and we were dealing with a lot of digital displays. And so it was so hot in the living room. The living room was filled with TVs and monitors, and we had no air conditioning. And then, of course, we had just boxes and boxes of cereal. Instead of ramen, we had tons of cereal. And so those were the early days. It was fantastic. It was, although the guys would say that it was torture, but I was like, "This is awesome. This is, you know, exactly the startup experience that I want to have." Prior to that, I'd started a biotech company, which the culture of that is very different than, you know, Implug and the tech startup vibe that we had. So after that, we decided, well, you know, this actually works pretty well. We save a lot of money. We don't have to get our own office. let's go and rent a house. So we rented a house, this time in a very nice neighborhood, and we lived and worked out of there. And at one point, we had 13 people that were living in the house.
So you had neighbors who were looking at you guys and are basically giving you the look.
Absolutely. So in fact, when we first moved into our house in Bel Air, we put a gigantic implug banner hanging from our gate.
Yeah,
and that
would go well.
So that people driving by. And we were like, yeah, we're in Bel Air. We want all these, you know, because they're influential people. So we're like, you know what? We want them to know about implug. So we hung this big banner, and we did have one or two people tell us, hey, this is Bel Air. You know, you can't do that. And I was like, okay, fine, I get it, but just watch. We're going to be awesome and you're going to love us. And you know what? So later on, you know, a year later, some of our neighbors warmed up to us and they were like, oh, hey, we actually saw implug at a restaurant we were at or at a hotel we stayed at. And so that was pretty cool.
So they figured out you weren't actually inside making crystal meth.
Yes. Although, you know, that's to be determined.
And at some point you were, Implug was part of an accelerator program?
Yes, we went through Start Engine.
Which does, it starts things obviously, but what's all that about?
So we went through this program, I believe it was about a 9-week program, and you're connected with mentors, you have demo days, you have pitch sessions, and it was really fantastic because when I came to LA, I really didn't know anyone. And so the accelerator is the one that connected me to all of the initial investors that we got, and that was very, very helpful. So it did what it's meant to do, which is accelerate the company. And I'm very grateful for that. And I recommend for any, you know, first time entrepreneur or somebody moving into a totally new city, I think joining an accelerator is extremely beneficial.
Mm-hmm. And how much money have you raised at this point?
So we raised $5 million.
In total, or that's what you initially raised? Total, okay.
Yep, total.
And where are you at now as a company in terms of headcount and you know, the metrics behind how you're doing? Are you EBITDA positive, that sort of thing?
So we're cash flow positive, which is really exciting for us to get to that point. It was hard to make that decision to get there because I think in the tech industry, so much is about grow, spend as much money as possible. But for us, I think we really cared about demonstrating that we are a sustainable business. And we have companies that are massive Fortune 500 companies that depend on our technology. Their customers are always looking at their displays that are powered by implug. So I think for us, that was extremely important. Now, another thing that we are very proud of is we've kept the team very lean to and gotten to this point. So we have 18 full-time people in our Los Angeles office.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have a full-time chef or any of those things?
Well, our head of marketing is almost like our, you know, chef because he's so amazing at cooking. And he really does a great job bringing food into the office for everyone. I think you met him, Colin Beauvais.
We trade emails all the time.
Oh, yes. Oh, he's a fantastic cook. Next time you come to the office, I'll have to remind him to cook something special.
Feed me.
Yes.
So you have 18 there, and you have offices in Europe and in Africa. What's that about? Are they staff or are these kind of partner offices?
Yeah, they're staff and they're full-time, which is so cool. So we have offices in places I had never gone to or even thought I'd ever open an office in. So Nigeria, Slovakia, UK, Australia, Japan.
And these are funded offices that like they're on your payroll.
They are not. So they are full-time implug, but what they do is they pay a licensing fee for all of the displays that they use using implug software.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like a franchise?
Yeah, kind of like a franchise. We like to think of them as part of the team because we communicate with them frequently. In fact, today, Implug Australia's team is flying here and hanging out with us for the next 2 days.
Uh-oh.
Oh, you know, from down under. I'll make sure to not take them to Outback Steakhouse.
No. But your liver is never going to be the same.
Well, I got built up my liver pretty well in college.
Yeah, sounds like You basically, like your first year of your business sounds like it was fifth year of college.
Pretty much.
So you kind of made a pivot from what I can tell, did what a lot of companies do, where you got into the build it and they will come advertising model. So you kind of started out as a digital out-of-home company, but you're out of that now, right?
Correct. Yes, I am so happy to have made that pivot. It saved us a lot of money and it made us a lot more scalable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough go, and I advise a lot of people who, you know, call me and say, we want to do this, and I just say no in the most polite way.
I wish we talked to you on day one. Now, of course, I'm so glad we did it because we really felt the pain that our customers feel now about setting up digital signage.
Yeah, the advertising market is a tough one. So now you're a CMS, you provide a solution. What are you focused on?
We're focused on making it very easy to manage thousands of displays. And the second piece is we want to make it really easy to automate all the content that's shown on the screen. So the two pain points that we learned from digital signage is, one, it's difficult to set up, so we wanted to solve that and make it, you know, a setup process less than 3 minutes. And then the second part is people say, oh yeah, it's so difficult to constantly create new content and keep the content fresh on the displays. So we solved that by creating this app market where you can integrate existing digital content online, like social media, and it automatically updates on the screen so that if you wanted to, you could use InPlug as your set it and forget it solution, and the content would constantly stay fresh.
Mm-hmm. And are there curation tools around that?
Yes. Yep. And so you can have filtered social media posts. You can choose to only show your own social media feeds. We give our customers a lot of options around that.
One of the things that I find interesting about what you guys do is this whole sort of millennial perspective on the world, in that some of the apps that you guys have integrated are apps that involve Slack and tool sets that a lot of white middle-aged guys wouldn't be familiar with at all.
Yeah, we wanted to make sure that we're always conscious of the new apps coming out and the new tools. And so that's why we made our platform an open platform, mm-hmm. a place where there can be apps that are built. Because if you build an app market, it's easy to stay innovative because you can just add all these additional apps whenever the newest tool and feature comes out.
And if I'm understanding this correctly, part of the whole App Store pitch is that, yeah, we produce apps that our clients can use, but because it's open, third-party developers can develop their own apps and put them on the store. Is that happening yet?
Yeah, it is. We've seen customers build their own private apps. We've seen the offices that we have in other countries, they have a different, sometimes they have, you know, different types of social media apps that they use. And so they'll build their country-specific types of apps. So that's pretty exciting, and we really like to see that. So we have a lot of different private apps that are built by our customers or our other offices.
So what's a good example of that?
So for example, there's an app in our private app market called the Names Day app. So I guess in Europe, and particularly Slovakia, instead of celebrating your birthday on the day that you were born, every single day there's a different name that's celebrated. So if your name is John, you might be, all the Johns in your country might be celebrating birthdays on like May 5th or something. And then the next day, maybe all the Toms. And then the next day, all the Katies. Huh. And so now this app, what it shows is automates onto the screen what name is being celebrated that day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. I wanted to, because you're mentioning social media, that there's a whole IP issue out there that's kind of developed in the past year or so, where there's at least one company that's asserting its intellectual property and saying, guys, if you want to visualize social media onto a digital signage screen, we have a patent around that and you need to license this. So how are you guys dealing with that?
We are actively dealing with it.
And that's about all you could say?
I mean, for us, I understand. I think I get where they're coming from. And, you know, if anyone, there's lots of companies that hold patents for various things, whether they choose to enforce it or not is a different story. Now, I don't think this license or this patent, having it makes or breaks the company, but I think it, in their view, it's probably just an added revenue source.
Right.
Does it? Of course, we weren't happy to see it, so we had to deal with it.
Yeah. Does it come up in terms of if you're talking to end users and saying we can do this, is there even any awareness out in the marketplace?
Not really. If anything, it's that I've got people we're recruiting and interviewing to hire for. They've asked about it like, oh, hey, are you guys going to be okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, trust us, we are going to be more than okay. It's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. So where do you see, and where does your development team, guys like NavDeep and so on, kind of see the product and the marketplace going over the next 1 or 2 years?
I think a big differentiator is going to be a push for continuously making it easy to use the interface. I think it's really in the 2000s, late 2000s, that you've seen every kind of tool have a huge push for what's called great UI and UX. Mm-hmm. In the 90s, that really wasn't the case. I mean, you look at Windows and it was not pretty. But then now it's kind of like everyone's moving towards the Apple model, which is making these beautiful, clean interfaces are really good looking. The fonts, people are very thoughtful about the font and character sizes. So I think there's going to be a continued trend towards great UI UX. Mm-hmm. The next trend, I think, is going to, a lot of companies are probably going to have to play catch up to building a platform, because that's the easiest way to add new features and new app integrations. And so we're happy that we immediately built our platform as an open platform. Mm-hmm. And built a software development kit to create those apps, because we're going to see a lot more. It's not just going to be Instagram and Snapchat, but there's constantly going to be really great new apps that people are going to want to have integrated with their digital signage.
So in many respects, you're kind of morphing into a distribution and management platform for all kinds of apps, including social media apps, and I'm sure there'll be data visualization apps and so on and so on.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
Okay. What do you see as your strongest vertical? Is it stuff like corporate comms?
Yeah, it is. We've had a lot of success with corporate communication or internal communication. I would say over 50% of our customers now are using us for digital displays inside of their office.
Mm-hmm. And are you doing much trade in small to medium business retail like you started out in, or has that kind of gone away?
We're still doing some, although it's declined. I think the biggest growth that we've seen is one, working with medium-sized business to large businesses, Fortune 500. Mm-hmm. And the other growth area is the use case. So we break it down into two. Are you using it for marketing, or are you using it for internal communications? Mm-hmm. And we've seen huge growth in internal communication.
Yeah, I certainly hear that over and over again. How do you as a company cut through all the noise that's out there when there are literally hundreds of digital signage content management CMSs who are all saying some of what you're saying, that we're easy to use, we're friendly, we're affordable, we're efficient, and on and on and on. How do you break through that?
Yeah, well, I just remember how we were one of them, you know, in the early days, one of the new ones where I think a lot of people probably just wrote us off. Okay, they're going to be around for a year and a half, and then they're going to not make enough money and then get out of the business or realize how hard it is. So we were there. And so I actually get excited when I see a lot of companies coming into the space, because it means that it's a growing space. It means that a lot of people see a need for it or have experienced a need for it. And so that excites us. Now, I think when we think about some of the newer competition coming into the space, we know how long it took us to really build a stable software. Mm-hmm. And so we know that it's going to take them a while. And a lot of the claims, I think if customers use it, they'll see that they're not going to be happy. And what's written on the website as something that works may not work. And we've already seen a lot of customers that tried another solution and then said, actually, it didn't do what it's supposed to do, and then moved on to us. But I think that's, you know, natural in business.
Hmm. All right. Very good. Very interesting chat. Thank you very much for spending the time with me.
It was great chatting with you, Dave.
All right, take care.
Okay, thank you.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9.net every day and subscribe to this podcast as I stick my shiny new Tascam recorder in the faces of more industry people in the coming weeks. Thanks again for listening. 16.9, the blog, and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. I'm Dave Haynes.